You're listening to Market Boldly, a podcast for executives, brand managers, branch managers, marketing directors, and sales managers in distribution who want to build their brand, stimulate sales, and drive profits. I'm your host, Katrina Olson. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today on Market Boldly is Shad Thomas, president of Glassbox Research, a Chicago-based quantitative market research firm providing a clear view into their clients' strategic branding issues with transparent solutions that are incisive and actionable. Shad is a fellow University of Illinois alum. In fact, we met in 2009. Isn't that right, Shad? Was it 2009?
I believe so, yeah.
That was due to your position as a member of the College of Media James Webb Young Board and Advisory Committee. And we were at the Sandage Symposium, which I believe they do every other year. As I recall, we were both talking to some marketing students and looking at some of their work. And here we are, 8 years later, if you can believe it. So welcome to Market Boldly, Shad.
Thanks so much, Katrina. It is hard to believe it's been 8 years, and you're exactly right. It was 2009 because that was the year that we launched Glassbox Research. So it was a great year, yes. And
I did not realize that.
Yes, the very same year. And you've hosted some really great and interesting sessions, and I'm honored to play a part in your series. So thank you for the invitation.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. Okay, so just last month, you and I judged the electrical distributor, TED Magazine's Best of the Best Marketing Awards. Every year we see something a little different. I think we've seen some evolution as well. So what do you think? Should we talk about what we saw this year?
That'd be great. I'm really excited about it. It's just been really fascinating to see how the marketing and the industry is really becoming a lot more sophisticated and really more effective every single year that we do the judging. And it feels as though the companies are almost challenging each other, or maybe what they're doing is sharing information and they're all upping their game and they just keep getting better and better. And so today, nearly all the entries, I'd say, seem to have really clear strategy statements. And those strategies tend to be focused on much more tightly linking the company to the industry. And I think one good example of that is the events category. So when I first started judging, we'd see some pieces that, while they might be well-designed and pretty, they didn't have as focused of a strategy as what we're seeing today. For instance, we used to see some events that didn't really enforce the industry, things like casino nights and racing days. And while that may have been a lot of fun for the participants to do, it didn't do as good of a job of reinforcing the company's relationships that they have with their customers. And so today, the types of events that we're seeing are really much more informative, educational, and they showcase how the companies can use their expertise of specifically the electrical industry, as opposed to borrowing some of those other sorts of things like casino nights, et cetera, but really leaning more heavily on the electrical industry to improve the businesses of their participants. And I think that's really smart. It's maybe being more reflective of the overall trend in business, where companies have to ensure that they're getting a good return on investment. So when a company sends their employees to one of these events, they know they're going to be coming back with some additional skills, some new training that is going to help them do their business even better. So yeah. I think it's a great improvement. It's a great evolution from what we've been seeing in the past.
Yeah, I would agree. They're much more strategic in their thinking and their approaches. That's been really good to see. So I was also excited about the fact that they were really looking at the customer journey. And I know that sounds like a buzzword, but the concept and the thought behind it is really understanding what process our customers go through before making a purchase and putting themselves in the customer's shoes. Did you notice that?
I did. I'm really glad that you brought it up because I was pleased to see that just like you were, but I was really impressed too. I think that what we're seeing is the industry adopting some really innovative new ways of thinking, and the customer journey mapping that you mentioned is a prime example. There's one entry that we took a look at, and I'm not going to mention any names on our discussion today, but they included a really incredibly thoughtful analysis of every point where their company comes into contact with their customers. And then what they did is they developed a plan for how to improve each of those connections with their customers. And when they improved those connections, they were simultaneously reinforcing their brand, what their brand was all about. And I think it was just truly some amazing thinking. And I think it's going to drive even greater loyalty. And I'm sure down the road, it's going to drive even greater business rewards for them. I think beyond that, in the macro world of marketing, we're seeing more and more companies take advantage of micro-targeting. And so while it's important to have one primary target, I think, for a brand, whenever we talk to our clients, we always think it's important for them to have kind of a lighthouse that they steer their brand toward, something that's going to be able to help guide their brand over time. But there's also many opportunities where companies can now use micro-targeting to efficiently build relationships with smaller audiences. And we saw a fascinating entry this year in the competition where a company recognized the needs of a specific submarket. In this case, that was the Portuguese market. And what they did is they built out a mini campaign to support them. So it worked well because it fit with their overall marketing strategy, but it also helped to incorporate the needs of the Portuguese market.
Yeah, it reminded me of the one we saw the previous year where they started a Spanish-speaking ordering hotline because they were in a geographic area where they had a lot of Spanish-speaking clients and contractors and people on the job who were ordering supplies. So I thought that was really clever too. And along those lines, I'm happy to see a lot more diversity this year in terms of the photos, the people in their videos and the people they interviewed and in their customers. I know there were a lot of videos where we saw people of different ages and ethnicities and genders and lifestyles. And these were real people. They were their customers or their employees. So I don't know that it was even a concerted effort, but in the past we've not seen that kind of diversity. So I noticed it, and I'm sure you did too.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we're seeing a lot more diversity reflected in the marketing, and I think it's really smart. I think that these companies are clearly monitoring the demographic trends in the U.S., and they're adopting their strategy to better reflect the diverse face of the entire industry. Customers always respond better when they feel that a company understands them and their unique needs. So I think that when they see images of people that they can relate to, it underscores that they can have a relationship with that company and that that company is going to be able to meet their needs. I was also happy to see a lot of community involvement. There were companies that pitched in to help after floods and storms, et cetera. And what they would do is they would donate or secure materials and deliver them and do whatever they could to help address the problem. And I always like to see electrical companies not only offering monetary support, but also contributing in ways that leans on their unique industry expertise. Like when disasters happen, it's really important to restore electrical power, of course, and also to help the community rebuild. And so what we've learned is that a lot of these companies are able to use their expertise and help really in ways that many other companies or organizations wouldn't be able to. And the other thing that we learned is that a lot of these companies have actually got standing committees or teams in place so they can coordinate philanthropic efforts throughout the year. And so what you see is that if a disaster strikes, these standing committees are able to actually react very quickly and to be able to get help to those people right away.
I also think adding to that is that they have the unique ability because they are all about getting materials to people. You know, so they have fleets in place, routes, you know, whatever. They have the infrastructure and the systems already in place to deliver materials to people because that's what they do. That's their business. So what else did you see in terms of themes this year?
First, we're seeing a lot more companies using video, and I think companies are using the video to do some real storytelling from the perspective of their employees, and we even saw some where it was the customers that were talking about their experience, which I think, as we talked about before, that's helpful because it allows potential customers and prospects to get a sense of what it would be like to work with that company, and I think you know, those are just particularly effective. It reinforces a relationship that their loyal customers already have, and then it can also attract new customers to come and learn more about the company as well. You know, I think that just it helps a company to build empathy with their customers so that they can see themselves more in those shoes. From a more tactical execution perspective, we also saw several companies utilizing new drone technology to efficiently film video. And these types of production capabilities really used to be out of reach for most of us that didn't have access to a Hollywood soundstage. But affordable drone technology with a camera is enabling a lot of companies to give their customers and prospects unique views into their capabilities and offerings. For instance, we saw some where the company would fly a drone through their actual warehouse so people could see how the warehouse is organized and is seeing a great breadth of product. As with any new technology, I think it's really important to incorporate it in a way that reinforces the strategy and message with key audiences. So a lot of times you really need to connect the dots between having some new or greater capabilities and informing people, how do those new capabilities create new benefits for the customer? Not just is it a brand new warehouse, but really what benefit does that bigger and new warehouse give customers?
And, you know, in addition to showing their actual facilities, I saw a lot more talk about company culture, and I know a lot of that's tied into research. They knew what would attract people to their companies, and I think part of that's for recruiting purposes as well. A lot of it is, actually. But I saw a lot of talk about company culture and what it's like to do business with this company. So I really feel like they're trying to empathize with their customers. But speaking of, you know, research and how you need to know what your customers want and what they'll empathize with and showing them that you empathize, research is what you do at Glassbox. Now, you and I do kind of different types of research. I've been doing some qualitative stuff, and you do more quantitative work. But could you maybe talk about, actually, if you could just real quickly define for us the difference between qualitative and quantitative. I could try, but I know you can do it better.
Sure thing. And you hit the nail right on the head. What we focus on is quantitative research. And so quantitative research is where you go out to ideally a representative sample of people so that it can be projectable to the U.S. population. Mm-hmm. And you design a survey that you put in front of people and ask them to take. And typically, for quantitative research, what you want are closed-ended questions, which is where people are answering yes or no with checkboxes, or on a scale, they may be telling us how much they agree or disagree to different types of questions about maybe their attitudes toward the industry or their interest in certain products. And so quantitative research allows us to understand what percentage of people actually feel that way. So we can look at the population that we're studying, and maybe we see that the majority of people, like 65%, care tremendously that a distributor have a deep offering of products, like a breadth of products and also a lot of variations on that. So that's how quantitative research can help us. Qualitative research, on the other hand, the two work very well hand in hand. And so qualitative research is more where you're talking with people, either one-on-one or in a focus group type of setting, and want to just understand what are they thinking about, like getting some potential answers to questions, because sometimes you just need research to know what you don't know. And so qualitative research allows you to talk with the people in the industry and figure out what sorts of things are important to them. And it's those findings are much more directional because you're just talking to a small number of people, typically like a focus group, maybe somewhere from like 6 to 10 people, or there can be one-on-one interviews where it's the interviewer, like you, talking directly with prospects for a company. But those interviews can be really powerful because it can uncover insights that can help a business grow. The one thing it doesn't answer is, well, what percentage of people would be interested in that particular product or whatever it is that you're talking about. And that's where sometimes it's nice to have the qualitative research work hand in hand with the quantitative to help inform the types of questions that should be asked in quantitative. So you use the qualitative to understand what are some fertile new territories, and then follow up with quantitative research to validate that and to see what percentage of people actually feel that way.
Thank you for explaining that. Now, I know you can't talk about specific clients or projects, but can you tell us a little bit more about what you do, why your clients come to you, and why research is important to them? That's like three questions all in one, but just pick one and go.
Sure thing. We're really fortunate in that we get to work with clients across a lot of different sorts of product categories, everything from companies in the B2B or business-to-business space, such as national laboratories, heavy durable products like snowplow. And we also work with companies in the B2C space or business to consumer, and that can be everything from financial services to quick service restaurants and consumer packaged goods. But the one commonality of our work is what you already noted, is we focus exclusively on doing quantitative research and across all those different industry verticals, but we always work on informing the communication strategy. So we'll work with a lot of these different companies, but it's typically to help them understand who it is that they should be talking to, what are the types of things that they should say, how should they say it, where should they reach those different targets? And what's interesting, what we found is that even though we're focused on the marketing strategy, a lot of times we'll be interviewing consumers and understanding what are their needs, and we'll uncover some unmet needs, which can actually help inform some new product innovations, maybe have helped our clients come up with brand new offerings that they weren't even aware of that their customers would need. So it's helped them grow in that way. And so what I can do is just go through each of those and tell you a bit more about how we do that. So like with the first one, one of the first questions that people will come to us with is, who should we talk to? And so market research can help a company or a brand better understand who their current customers are, as well as who might be good customers. And that can be accomplished with quantitative research as sophisticated as a big consumer segmentation study, which can be expensive and take a lot of time. Or it can be as scrappy as some in-house persona development. The important thing is to really never underestimate how much knowledge you may have already in-house. And many times you just need to ask the right questions and organize the knowledge and the data that you already have. The second question that people come to us with is, what should we say? And so we can use market research to help a brand understand what is their unique essence, you know, what is their DNA, if you will, and ensure that they always stay true to that identity. And oftentimes we work with brands like the ones that submit to Best of the Best, and they're actually cursed with an abundance of stories to tell. And I say the word cursed jokingly, because it's always great to have a story to tell, and the more material you have to work with, the better those stories can be. But sometimes having so much information, so many stories to tell, actually makes it challenging to be disciplined and really focused on what and telling the story of what your customers need to hear.
Yeah, finding that one or two or three stories that'll really resonate with them out of all the stories that you have. Is that what you're talking about?
You're exactly right. Yeah. Sure. So I think effective research is a way of distilling that wealth of information down to just the essential elements. And so we've worked with a lot of different brands to help them distill that knowledge down into a shorter, almost like an elevator speech that tells a story of who they are and what their higher purpose is in satisfying the needs for their customers.
And then how they tell that story is another issue, right?
Yeah, so sometimes brands will have, maybe they already understand who they should be talking to and they know what they want to say, but they'd like to understand, well, how should we say it? And when I say that, how should we say it? What is the tone of that unique brand voice? Like, are they the trusted expert or are they the supportive helper? Maybe they're more of like a cutting edge innovator. Or are they like the tried and true partner that's really stood the test of time? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be a little bit of all those things or a couple of them. Mm-hmm. And so research among current customers and the better prospects can help really hold a mirror up to your own brand and understand how people perceive you. When you have relationships with people, you want to have a consistent voice. Mm-hmm. You don't want to kind of have discordant things that your brand says, because what happens is people start to lose sight of, well, I thought that person was more like my trusted partner, and now they're trying to act like they're, you know, this super innovative company. So yeah. I think it's important to find a voice and to stay true to what that voice is, so that you don't confuse mm-hmm. you know, what your customers' perceptions are of your brand.
And maybe that's sometimes making sure all your different silos or departments are speaking in the same voice, right?
You know, that's a great point. And, you know, sometimes we've done research within a company and helped uncover some of those misperceptions that the organizations have right inside. And so I think it's helpful for a brand to recognize that, you know, sometimes the marketing department may say, hey, we want to be the trusted partner, and they don't realize that another part of the organization is actually giving more of an innovative type of voice. And so sometimes we'll do research within the company itself to uncover some of those types of incongruities.
Yeah, and one I think we've seen a lot of in the past is the quality versus price. You know, oh, we're a low-cost provider, oh, we're a quality provider. And we know just from common sense that those two don't necessarily go hand in hand, you know.
You're exactly right. And it's important to understand when things are diametrically opposed, yeah. like quality and price. Yeah. And you're never going to win if right. you try to say that you're both of those things. It's better to pick one yeah. and then to do that really well.
I used to have a printer, and then we'll move on to the last category, but I used to have a printer who said, price, quality, or quick turnaround, pick two. I can get you two, but I can't get you all three. I thought that was pretty clever.
Yes, I think it's clever. I think it's a great insight, and everyone should hold that up and say, okay, which of those three are we going to be? And mm-hmm. recognize that you can't be everything to everybody.
Right. So finally, where you reach these people or how you find them, that's the kind of the other big question, right?
Yeah, and so we can do quantitative research to help our clients understand, well, once they've identified who to talk to, what to say, how to say it, then the last piece is, well, where do you reach these people? And so you can do research amongst either your current customers and the prospects to understand what are their preferences. You know, maybe they passively look for the e-blasts, or maybe some other people are much more proactive in using an app that the company has got. And the only right answer is the one that your customers and prospects desire. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that you're in the right place at the right time to meet their needs. And you know, as we talked about earlier, there's that company that identified that a lot of their prospects were Portuguese. They did their research and they figured out that there are ways of reaching those Portuguese customers through, I believe what they were using was printed magazines and also through email and then having a Portuguese portion of their website. So I think that it's really important to recognize how those people want to be reached and then to find ways of reaching them.
Mm-hmm. I would think those specialized sort of smaller publications would be very cost effective too, don't you think? I don't know if you
think so.
Yeah,
you're reaching a very targeted audience, so you're not wasting a lot of your media dollars by doing something at the extreme. And I know that people these days don't do as much television, but that would be an extremely expensive way to go about reaching customers in this way. So those Portuguese magazines were very efficient.
Okay, so I want to get back to best of the best. How do you see electrical distributors and even manufacturers using research these days? Are they using more research, do you think?
I think they definitely are. We're seeing that across so many of the entries where in order to develop their objective statement, what they're doing is they're starting with some research. It's been a blend of everything that you and I have talked about, where maybe they started with some qualitative, where they were talking with various customers, or maybe relying on their own account representatives that interface with customers all the time. And then some of them were doing primary quantitative research, where they would field a study to get some information.
It was really good to see the advancements in the use of strategy and research. And I don't know if they're doing that because we made them, because we gave them a form. Matt that said, here's what we want to know. We want to see your strategy. I don't know if you remember, before we gave them the strategy statement guidelines, what we got. We get like 10 pages of product information. It's like, no, that's interesting, but we don't need that, you know?
I do remember that well. And I think that I've definitely seen an evolvement of how those strategy statements are becoming so much more focused. And I love to see that. And I actually like to see shorter statements. To your point,
yes.
Sometimes companies will have, I think, perhaps too big of an objective. And I think it's important to have something very high in the sky that you aim for. Maybe you want a whole lot of things. But I think when it comes to marketing initiatives, I think that succinctly stating what your goal is very powerful. And it's something that can then cascade throughout the organization, where you can share that with with the account reps, and everyone can get on board and everyone can start rowing in the same direction.
Well, and I think what we're seeing too is the need to have more measurable. You talked about ROI, return on investment earlier on. We're seeing the need and the demand from the C-suite to have more measurable goals and objectives. And that's easy in some ways if they're very specific, like build your audience for your blog or whatever, because you can see that and measure it. Sometimes it's very difficult though, especially if it's a brand awareness thing where we want people to understand these 5 points about our brand. And that's maybe a situation where kind of research you do would be helpful. So how would you recommend somebody approach that if they say, you know, we don't think we have a very good level of brand awareness in this market?
Oh, that's a great question. And we do that for quite a few of our customers in various industries. And because it's always helpful for them to get some feedback on how is their marketing working. And the type of study that we'll do is what we call a tracking study. And it's best if you can do it before your campaign launches so that you have a baseline read and you understand, okay, prior to us launching this new marketing initiative, our awareness within the audience that we care about is like 45%. I'm just making that up. Mm-hmm. And then what you can do is then launch your campaign. So whatever that campaign is, if it's email blast where you've bought lists and you're sending out more product announcements and more brand awareness sorts of initiatives to that audience. Then after some time, after that's been allowed to build for a while, then if you go back out with a very similar survey and measure brand awareness, then you can see what sort of lift did that particular campaign give for the brand. And so ideally what you'd like to see is that amongst the audience that you care about, that that lift of awareness went from 45%, maybe up to the majority of people where it's now 55%, 60%, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so that's one effective way to be able to get that feedback. Additionally, when you're doing that sort of work, I think it's always helpful also to understand, are people getting, are they receiving the campaign elements that we want them to? So what was the objective of the marketing campaign? Was it to build awareness that, hey, our brand is always there for you as a trusted partner, or that we're the innovative leader? So it's important during the tracking study to not only just measure awareness, but then also to see how are perceptions of the brand shifting over time, and are you actually moving it in the direction that you want to move? Beyond simply building awareness, you want to make sure that you're building your brand in a positive way.
Oh, that makes sense. And you could probably do that over the course of a year as not just a measure of a campaign, but as a measure of your whole strategic plan for the year, your strategic marketing plan for the year, couldn't you?
That's a great idea. And actually, that is shifting gears a little bit into some brand equity types of research. So what I was initially thinking of was a brand tracking sort of study where you're looking at the effect of a campaign. But it's always important to keep your finger on the pulse of your brand. And if you do some brand equity research, you can measure not only awareness for your brand, but how strong of a connection do your best customers have, past customers, prospects, all these people, all these constituencies that you care about, how is that relationship with the brand evolving? Just like a relationship that you have with another person, just like what you and I have. Mm-hmm. And so what you want to do is ideally have a relationship with your customers that hits on a lot of different cylinders, where it's a brand that they really understand, they know quite a bit about. Maybe it's a brand that they would be willing to recommend to other people, so advocacy, a brand that really understands them and their unique needs, a brand that adapts, empathizes with their customers and understands what their needs are and adapts to offer new things, new types of services and products that they know they need. So I think that's a great suggestion that you had, which is to do a more of a brand equity type of study and to do that more frequently, like every year, and understand how is the relationships that our customers have with our brand changing. And ideally, you want to make sure it's getting stronger.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, what would you like to see them doing more of? What do you think this industry and members of this industry, manufacturers or distributors, should be doing or could be doing that perhaps they're not, at least that we're not seeing, you know, in the competition?
So that's a great question, Katrina. I'd like to see more brands asking the right strategic questions and using all the resources at their disposal to address those questions. And while I'm a fan of the primary quantitative research for all the things that we just talked about, like brand awareness testing, new product concept testing, things like that, I think that really, people shouldn't forget that they already have probably a tremendous amount of resources available right within their organization. And I think we talked earlier a little bit about how sales associates interact directly with customers every day. And they can actually provide a great deal of qualitative information about what are the sorts of things that are selling well, what kinds of things are they wanting to see from the company. And while those types of results are more qualitative, they can really provide some insights that can be more more directional and that can be more efficient and help a brand move in a positive direction. The other thing to not forget is that IT departments have got a lot of information where they're monitoring companies' websites, and they can oftentimes provide information about what pages of a website are being hit most often, where are people spending more time, and that can give some insight for a company to understand, oh, these are the types of things that they want to see from us, so we should spend more time evolving that offering and anticipating what people need. So there's really a great wealth of places where people can look for golden insights. The other thing I'd like to see is, I think, just for them to continually surprise us with their smart, creative thinking. As you and I have talked about, you know, every year there's usually just several different entries that just blow us out of the water. Mm-hmm. And I've learned a lot about both the electrical industry, like the technical side of it, as well as ways of being more effective marketers. And so I think what you and I can do is we can share that best-in-class thinking and get the word out. And I think, as you mentioned early on when we were chatting, it seems like there's an evolution in terms of the entries that we're seeing where people the different companies are writing tighter and tighter strategy statements. And I'd like to think that it's really them seeing the effective marketing that's out there and everyone challenging themselves and each other to up the bar continuously. And I think that we're seeing that over time.
Oh, so you don't think it's us? We can't take credit for that?
I think we can in some ways.
No, I'm just kidding. I think you're right. I think they're feeling a little more of the heat from their competition, and they're, you know, they want to win, obviously, but they also want to do effective marketing and get results. And, you know, that's good to see. And it's been really exciting in the last few years, especially. So, Shad, do you have any final thoughts or advice or insights about branding or research for listeners in the electrical distribution industry or any industry for that matter?
I do, yeah. It may sound basic, but I really think it's very important to clearly understand your objectives before setting out. I think it's human nature for us to get caught up in some new offering and want to tell people all about it, you know, to show like the bells and whistles. But I think it's more important to take a step back and really take a bigger view and really consider who it is that you want to reach and how you're going to reach them so that you can make the best use of your marketing dollars. And when you have those sorts of communications, you always want to be able to connect the dots for the customer so that they're not just seeing the bells and whistles, but they're understanding, what do those bells and whistles mean for me? How is it going to allow me to do a better job for my company? And then also, it's going to allow, as you mentioned before, the executives at a company will understand, what's the return on investment that we're going to get? So it's not just simply talking about those bells and whistles, but really understanding, what do those bells and whistles do for other people?
Well, Shad, I've been wanting to have you on the podcast ever since I started, which has really only been a few months. But I know you're busy. And so thank you for taking time out of your day to join me on Market Boldly.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. And I'm really glad that we've been able to share a lot of these observations that we've talked about. When we're in the midst of judging for, you know, 2 or 3 days, it's hard to take a step back like this and to be able to really reflect on it because we're looking at so many different entries. So this has been a lot of fun. I always like talking more about the entries. And so thank you very much for inviting me to be part of the series. And I hope to see you soon.
My guest today on Market Boldly was my friend, associate, fellow marketing competition judge, fellow U of I alumni, or I guess we say Illinois alumni, and owner of Chicago-based Glassbox Research, now with a Houston office.
You've been listening to Market Boldly, a podcast for members of the distribution channel who want to build their brand, stimulate sales, and drive profits. I'm your host, Katrina Olson. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again. Find this and future episodes of Market Boldly on my website at katrinaolson.com or subscribe on iTunes or Google Play Music.